The Lombardi may have been lifted, but that doesn't mean there's no football to talk about. It's the offseason, and there's no better way to stay up to date with the latest from our league than with the Around the NFL podcast. Join me, Dan Hansis, and my buds, Mark Sessler and Greg Rosenthal, for news and fresh content all offseason long. From the start of free agency, where we'll break down familiar faces headed to new places, to the next generation of superstars walking across that stage at the NFL draft, we have you covered. Listen to the Around the NFL podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Heed the call.
It's draft season. The 2024 NFL draft is right around the corner, and the Move the Six podcast has you covered for all your draft needs. The show's hosted by me, Daniel Jeremiah, and my partner, Bucky Brooks.
When it comes to Detroit and the draft, Move the Sticks is the podcast that will answer all of your questions. Who should you put in your mock draft? Don't worry, tune in and you'll be ready to watch the draft like a scout.
We've been studying these prospects all season, so you won't get a better opinion. Subscribe now and listen to the Move the Sticks podcast on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A warmer from below, welcome to Bumpy Las Vegas for Ghost Against Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the Beast and Family podcast. We've got a tremendous podcast for you guys. In segment number two, Brian Rolfe of HXCBB is going to be joining me. I'm going to be taking a look at some of the teams that got good and less than savory draws the NCAA tournament. We're going to be diving into some of the upset specials that he likes, and I am going to be posing to him the question, am I crazy for thinking that Boise State has a chance to be able to make the Elite Eight like I filled out in my bracket? So we're going to be posing those questions and so much more to Brian. We're also going to ask a little bit about how vulnerable Purdue is in this year's NCAA tournament, since it feels like they really got the toughest draw out of all these teams. And in the final segment, going to give you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Wednesday as we hit some bank shots. So the NIT is going to be served along with the two NCAA tournament games. And then once we get to tomorrow, you're going to get all the breakdowns once again of those Thursday NCAA tournament games. So if you missed the bracket special, which I did Monday at midnight Pacific, is simply labeled the 2023 bracket special. So it stands out from the rest of the Coast to Coast Hoops podcast. We've got that all there for you. I gave you guys my initial against the spread picks and my full bracket, but we will go back through those games once again tomorrow. So we've got you guys all covered there. And if you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways to be able to throw those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, @JNN_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please just send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Really did not get in any Twitter questions today, and I do have to do this more early than normal because the Greg Peterson Experience, that is from 9 to midnight Pacific time, midnight to 3 Eastern, out there on the East Coast on VSiN. So I do need to recap some things with not having a final on Pittsburgh versus Mississippi State, but I have no fear. The handicap of whoever wins versus Iowa State when that goes final, I will have that up on the spreadsheet, and that'll be broken down on Thursday, the full game. So have no fear there. But with that said, let's take a look at the few results that we do have from Tuesday. Try to find some trends. Try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the Rowdy recap.
As I'm doing this right now, we've got 3 NIT games that did go final. As anyone that was looking for confirmation bias that Rutgers did not belong in the NCAA tournament, you got it. Hofstra, they go on the road. They get it done 88-86 in overtime as Tyler Thomas went off in this game. 25 points. Aaron Estrada, team's main scorer, only had 13 points in this game. He had 5 turnovers. But for Rutgers, despite the fact that they go 8 of 20 from 3-point range, they lose this game because they actually lost a battle on the glass. 34-30, which to me was quite surprising. Got 22 big points out of Cam Spencer. He was up for this one, but Hofstra, they were able to get the job done out there. Our DK Nation pick, with regards to the NCAA tournament for Tuesday, that came through. Texas A&M Corpus Christi laying 3.5. That gets there. They actually closed in a lot of books as a 3-point favorite, and Corpus Christi had the lead throughout. I know that there are some people that are a bit salty about the amount of fouls called in this one. That was actually part of my handicap, though, if you listened to it yesterday. Corpus Christi, the best free throw shooting team in the field, saw these Missouri State 344th in the country in terms of fouls committed on a per-play basis on defense, and that turned out to be the difference in this one. 75-71 the final. Saw these Missouri State goes a paltry 9 of 20 at the free throw line. Corpus Christi, 27-35 at the free throw line. Corpus Christi wins a rebound battle 45-30. They did lose the turnover battle 14-12, and an uncharacteristically cold 3-point shooting night for Corpus Christi, going 4 of 18, but 22 points, 6 rebounds out of Jalen Jackson was able to bail them out. As for Southeast Missouri State, Chris Harris, Phil Brussel, they did all that they could. A combined 38 points, 12 assists to 5 turnovers, but guys around them just weren't able to really help out. I thought Toledo had a good chance to be able to win this game outright against Michigan, and I mean, Toledo actually led at the end of the first half, but Michigan went in flamethrower mode, 90-80. They take down Toledo's Michigan, 12 of 23 from three-point range. Joey Baker, 21 points. He shoots 5 of 7 from distance. Doug McDaniel, 16 points. He goes 4 of 6 from three-point range. Toledo went just 8 of 24 from the outside. Lost the rebound battle 39-29. So that was a little bit of a rough one. UAB, they win, they cover, they take down Southern Miss by a count of 88-60, as you had KJ Buffin. He was working in this one. 26 points, 12 rebounds. Jordan Jelly Walker was able to put in their 16. And for Southern Miss, a very nice season for them. But they went just 8 of 22 from three-point range in this one. As I record, Pittsburgh currently up by Mississippi State 15-14. So obviously in anyone's game sort of situation. But Frederico, he was out of the fold for Pittsburgh in this one. And as I record, Vanderbilt in the NIT currently up at the half on Yale 37-23, and Liberty up 32-23. So overs right now in the NIT have won 2-1, but right now we're looking like we might be able to get a pair of unders with those games. And when it comes to the NCAA tournament, favorites are 1-0 thus far. But if you're really taking a look at college basketball and what we've been able to get the last 30 days, it really has been quite a few overs, as it's been a little bit more of an over season. 52% of games have gone over the total this campaign, 2,873 overs to 2,651 unders. I mean, favorites and underdogs, relatively split favorites, covering at a 50.2% rate overall for the season. But if you take a look at the last 30 days, favorites have been hitting at 52.1%, 6-10, 561, and 26 against the spread. And in the time span, overs sitting at a 53.6%, 633 overs, 547 unders. So that's what we're getting in college basketball right now. And that's some of the results of what we all got on Tuesday. Anything of significance that I wasn't able to hit today, I will get you guys covered on the podcast tomorrow. But what is significant? Getting on one of the gentlemen of HXCBB, Brian Rolfe. He does absolutely amazing work over there. I'm going to be talking with them about the bracket, teams I think could be able to make a little bit of a run, the tough draw for Purdue in their region, and so much more. That's up next right here on Cusco Soups with myself, Greg Peterson, now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
Selected number one. Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the craziest surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL Draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL Draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
Are you ready to become a winning sports bettor? Schedule a call with SBIA to find out how their service can make you a long-term winning player. They've developed an innovative algorithm that maximizes units return, and they are so confident in their system that they offer a money-back guarantee. Sign up by October 31st and get their MBA package at no cost until they reach 10 net units. They treat sports betting like a business. So if you want to learn how to make your sports betting dreams a reality, visit them at SBIA1.com and check them out on social media at SBIA Sports.
Here in lovely Las Vegas, for Guns and Guns Seats, with myself, Greg Eats Peterson, now part of the Beeson Family and Podcast. It's always great to be joined by our guest, as Brian Rolfe does absolutely amazing work over at eCheck CBB. He is one of the lead writers over there, has been doing a great job all season long, taking a look at the game that we all know and love. He is based out there in the great state of North Carolina. He is part of the eCheck CBB Hangout as well. That is the show slash podcast that they do. Just taking a look at the great game of college basketball. He does that also with Connor Hope and Riley Davis. To be able to follow Brian on Twitter, that's at BRauf33, R-A-U-F, on that last name. And then the numbers 3 and 3 for eCheckCBB at eCheckCBB all together. Brian, it is always great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you. And Brian, when the bracket came out, what was your first reaction to everything? Because I honestly thought that the committee did a relatively good job. Certainly, there's always a team or two where you say, they should have been up a seed line, they should have been down a seed line, because everyone has their own opinion on these teams. But by and large, I took a look at the bracket and thought it was very fair. But one thing stood out to me in that felt like Purdue got the worst draw out of all the one seeds.
They did from a matchup standpoint. Even going into Selection Sunday over the weekend, it was like, if Purdue plays a pressing team like Memphis, they're going to struggle. And sure enough, Memphis has a tough first-round game with FAU, but that's who'd be waiting for Purdue if they were to take care of business in the first-round matchup. That was big to me. This was also coming, but I kind of didn't like how Houston and Texas were in the same region. To me, those are two elite teams, and I think if they were on opposite sides of the bracket, I would have put them in the championship game against each other. To have that as a potential Elite Eight matchup, along with the just difficult draw Texas had, that stuck out to me, along with Houston getting the second one seed over Kansas, which was certainly a surprise, I think, given the fact that Houston lost just minutes before the selection show.
I did think that that was a bit of a deal as well, because I know that there were a lot of people that were talking about, okay, what is going to be the overall seeding, but what do you make out of the actual travel itself? Because for me, when we look back at this bracket like 5 to 6 years from now, we probably aren't going to remember too much. Ah, man, you know what? Team X, they had to travel here slash share. We're going to remember them more or less as one seeds. I think the bigger thing is just the matchup that they get themselves. And for Kansas, drawing either Illinois or Arkansas, that's what really stands out to me a little bit more so than the travel, because either of those teams, they certainly have had their woes, especially on the road with their defenses here, but both of those teams have the potential to be very dangerous.
Two long, athletic, talented teams that I believe were in the top 20 in the preseason polls, really certainly had those expectations. neither of them have met him. Both have been inconsistent throughout the season. Arkansas can't shoot. Offense gets under it sometimes. And Illinois might be the most up-and-down team in America. But the potential for both of those is high. If Arkansas and or Illinois are playing near their best, that's more of like a four seed. And so to have them in the second round potentially could be a very difficult game for Kansas.
I do think that that is going to be a very fascinating matchup, to say the least, as joining me on the podcast. We do have Brian Rolf. He does amazing work over at EJCBB. And going into the NCAA tournament, there's always a mantra that I use. That is that matchups make fights. And when I take a look at these different conferences, they all sort of play their own style. Like the SEC had absolutely no jump shooting whatsoever. In the Big Ten, it was all about firing up home teams, taking a look at all the big men in that conference. The Big 12 was just night in, night out, absolute brutality. So there's that. Out of the conferences themselves, is there a conference that you think is going to either have a good or bad March? Because I take a look at things and I review my bracket. I don't have a single Big Ten team making it out of the first week of the tournament.
Yeah, the Big Ten's in a tough spot. Now, part of this is the way Big Ten teams play, where they're more interior, big men oriented. Also the fact that we didn't really see a Big Ten team have a lot of success away from their home court this year. Part of that is how good the home court advantages are in the Big Ten. The other side of that, though, is that nobody was necessarily good enough to consistently win away from their home fans or where the crowd is behind them. That's alarming as you go to a neutral site game where there will certainly be significant backing for the Big Ten teams, but it's more of a neutral, potentially slanted the opposite way atmosphere. The Big 12, yeah, I think, has to do well because of just how tested all those teams are going to be. There's the potential that they kind of fall flat because everyone's just exhausted from beating up on each other. The flip side is that, they've been going against elite teams all season long, and now they may not be. And so they might take off. They're the most battle-tested. I think the Big East, though, got fantastic draws for the Big East teams. I mean, Marquette's got a pretty easy path. UConn's a pretty friendly path. I know Providence has Kentucky in their first-round matchup, but that's not necessarily a vintage Kentucky team that really, really scares you. Bottom of the South region, I think it is, sets up really well for Creighton. Potential Sweet 16 matchup with Arizona, I think, actually favors Creighton just with style of play. So you go up and down the list and throw Xavier in there as well with who he checks CBB's tournament index. It's created by Eli Becker. Xavier has the easiest draw in tournament index history. It goes all the way back to 2011. The Big East is set up well. They have to capitalize on it, but they got the best draws. I think the Big 12, as we've seen all year, has the best.
With the Big East, I think that it is interesting to take a look at. As joining me on the podcast, we do have Brian Rolf, because I do think that the 14 seed that Xavier drew in Kennesaw State, they can be a little bit feisty. That's a team that I've been feeling very bullish on, a team that's been able to shoot threes on the road. Xavier, their main kryptonite is their defense, and that is the biggest thing with these Big East teams. I just noticed that Marquette and Xavier are teams that they really do rely upon jump shooting. Do you think there could be some volatility with those two teams? Because out of all the teams from the Big East, I think the team that I feel like has the highest floor, despite the fact that they had their losses in January, is UConn. I feel like there's a little bit less volatility with them, whereas with Marquette, I could see them going out a little bit early if they have a little bit of a rough shooting night. Same for Xavier, but if they're hitting shots, they could go very deep in the tournament as well.
Yeah, UConn had a rough month in January, but since then it's been playing at a really high level. So you expect that from them. Xavier doesn't have Zach Fremantle. Defense is an issue. If the offense isn't clicking, they're much more vulnerable than I think a normal four seed would be. And Marquette's in a similar boat. I mean, the level Marquette's been playing at the last couple of weeks we saw in the Big East tournament is incredibly high. But they get a 15 seed in Vermont. That is a very dangerous 15 seed, a very good program, very experienced team who matches up relatively well. You know, they're a team that plays a lot of guards, wants space the court as well, slow the game down. Can give Marquette some issues if Marquette's not on their game defensively. And I would point this out, Marquette's getting a lot of love because of how they looked in the Big East tournament, and rightfully so. 2 years ago, Shaka Smart's last year, Texas, and he was coming off of the Big 12 tournament title where it looked like Texas was finally going to break through and be national title contender, similar to the way Marquette is now. And that Texas team lost to Abilene Christian in the first round in an upset that was really unfathomable at the time. I don't think Marquette falls victim to that again, but Vermont is certainly capable.
Vermont, I think, is a fascinating team in that they are so efficient on offense. They're not quite that same Vermont team that we've seen in the past, though, in that they don't have as much rebounding, and the defense has been a little bit diminished from past years as well. So playing out there in American East, that there were some okay teams, like I liked UMass Lowell, but certainly wasn't necessarily the highest level competition, though they were very battle-tested in the non-conference portion of things. And that does lead into the question of some of these higher-seeded teams that could be able to make a little bit of a run. I did advance three double-digit seeds into my Sweet 16. I'm not sure if you have any teams that are a double-digit seed, if there's a team like 13 or greater they think is going to be able to pull off a first-round upset, but who are some of these teams a little bit further down the board, some of these double-digit seeds that you feel like got relatively good draws on Selection Sunday?
Furman got the best draw, right? They're a very good mid-major, one of the nation's best mid-majors over the last couple of years, but hadn't gotten over the hump to the NCAA tournament. The result now is a veteran team full of a lot of fifth-year guys who gets matched up with a Virginia team that has been really struggling over the last month, month and a half. You know, Virginia's been playing more like a 8-9, 7-10, as opposed to a 4-seed. That obviously bodes well for Furman, and they have the potential, I think, to handle that and handle their business. So I picked them there. But the one that has the ability to go the furthest, I think, is Kent State. Looking at the matchup against Indiana, I have not been the biggest Indiana fan this season. They have proved me wrong for a good portion of the season, but they're kind of struggling again. Their last eight games, they're 4-4. They have been bad away from home during that stretch, even stretching back a little bit longer. And Kent State's a very good team. They had three chances to pick up wins over tournament teams in non-conference play and had the lead against Houston with less than 4 minutes to play, had the lead against Charleston with less than 4 minutes to play, lead in that game with less than 4 minutes to play as well. Like, they're a team that is not scared of someone like Indiana. Indiana's track record in these kind of games, at least in this core group, is not great, to be nice. Jalen Hutchinson would be the difference, but I think it sets up well. If Kent State's able to win that game, you then have a second-round matchup that's very winnable against Drake, 12 seed, potentially win that game. Or Miami is dealing with an injury to the big man, or Chad Omier, who might miss the first game or first weekend in the NCAA tournament. Factor that in, I think there is a very realistic path for Kent State to get to the Sweet 16.
I do think that Kent State is a dangerous team. I wish they wouldn't been pitted up against Indiana, just because I do think that the main kryptonite of Kent State is having to go up against a dominant rebounding force, because they don't have quite as much of that. But I do agree with you. Kent State is a rock solid team. I personally advanced Furman to the round of 32 in my bracket. I actually took them to the Sweet 16 in my bracket. So we're in full agreement there. And I think that that does lead to into an interesting question. As Brian Rolfe of HXCBB is joining me on the podcast, how much do you take recent play into consideration? Because that's a big reason why I did advance Furman in my bracket. Virginia has been pretty awful the last month of the season. I recognize that they got that win against North Carolina in the ACC tournament, but past that, they have done a big, giant nothing burger. Meanwhile, I take a look at UConn. I'm relatively bullish on them coming into the NCAA tournament. Lost to Marquette in the Big East tournament, but at the same time, that was just a game where they went ice cold from three and still very nearly won it. Feels like they're showing a lot of those flashes that they did towards the non-conference portion of the season. How much do you take into account what these teams have done the last month of the season rather than the whole three-plus months of the season?
I think there's definite value in taking into consideration the way a team is playing and the level they're playing at. But I think that's different than recent results. We've seen time and time again a team's benefit from a soft portion of their schedule, whether that's playing lesser teams or getting a bunch of home games in a row, and then they fall flat, and everyone's like, well, they were so hot coming into this, and they weren't playing any better. They were just put in more advantageous positions to get better results. So level of play matters, and Virginia is one of those teams that, picking on Virginia here, has wanted to continue to win. That might have more to do with the ACC than anything else, but their level of play hasn't been good. Over the last month, I think they're outside the top 80 in T-Rank on BartTorvik.com, an offense that before the ACC tournament had been sub 200 during the month of February. Like, that matters more so than the fact that they went 6-2 or whatever it was that they went in February leading into the ACC tournament. So level of play definitely matters. You mentioned UConn as well. Like, they're playing better. Yeah, they kind of got worked by Marquette in the Big East tournament game, but Marquette was also a buzzsaw. You take into account what we saw before that, I feel comfortable with you.
UConn is a team that I think has all the potential to be able to make a run with the rebounding, the way that they play tough defense. Question is, can we trust him, Mr. Hurley, as a coach for me? As Brian Ralph of HXEBB is joining me on the podcast. And Brian, I know that everyone over there at HXEBB is filling out a bracket. I know that you are. I am not going to make you spill the beans on this podcast with what you have as your national title winner, your Final Four, anything like that. But I do want you to critique this one because I went out on a limb with one of my Elite Eight picks. I took 10 seed Boise State making a run all the way to the Elite Eight. How crazy am I for taking Boise State that far in my bracket?
Not crazy at all.
Yay!
I have picked some crazier things, so I wouldn't feel too bad about that. But the path is there, right? Particularly, you know, they would have to overcome 2 seed UCLA, and it did look like Jalen Clark's injury affected UCLA too much in the Pac-12 tournament, but that's not to say it wouldn't really impact them in the game against
Boise. The Adam Bona injury actually stood out to me as well.
Exactly, right. So UCLA is wounded, so Boise can take advantage of that. The rest of that bottom half of that bracket sets up well, so I don't hate that.
All right, that's what I like to see because, I mean, it is a little bit of a roll of the dice, but I've been fading the Big Ten with this bracket, and with UCLA, I was still on them with the Jalen Clark injury, but I feel like having cluster injuries like UCLA now has with Adam Bona being out of the fold, that's the biggest thing. I don't know how you gauge some of these teams that they are dealing with some injury concerns like Marcus Sasser. He should be good to go for the tournament, but I mean, that's one for Houston. And I do think that one injury is rough, but we've seen plenty of teams overcome one injury. It's when you have multiple guys hurt. I mean, case in point, Florida State this year. That's when I really get concerned about a team.
Absolutely. Because now you're testing your depth. And those guys are your 6th, 7th, 8th guys have to be starters. And even if they can do that, then you have to replace the 6th, 7th, and 8th guy and find new guys to contribute in those roles. And a lot of times that second wave of losing your bench production is where a lot of these teams get into trouble.
I am in total agreement with you there. And Brian, I know that you guys over there at HXEBB have done an incredible job all season long. This is where you guys shine. You put 12 months of work every single year into gauging college basketball. And I know that there's a lot on tap for you guys the next few days. So let the good people at home know how they're able to get all of your work and how they're able to follow you and everyone else from HXEBB on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, we're going to have the NCAA tournament covered from every angle on HXEBB.com. We already kind of do, but there's going to be plenty more content coming out on HXEBB.com over the next couple of days. All that you'll be able to find on Twitter at HXEBB as well. Myself personally is at BRAUF33, BRAUF33.
Brian does an amazing job taking a look at the great game of college basketball. Has joined me all throughout the year, not season, year on this podcast. He does a great job gauging things during the offseason as transfer portal season is here. But as we know, the NCAA tournament round of 64 gets started on Thursday. All the gentlemen of HXEBB, they're gassed up. They're ready to go. Same with Brian, who joined me on the podcast today and lent great insights. Big thanks to him for joining me right here on Coast Coast Hoops, now part of the Visa Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Wednesday as we hit some bank shots.
Be selected number one. Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL Draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get 3 wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills, We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL Podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the craziest surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL Podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the craziest surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Cusco Soups with myself, Craig Oops Peters, and now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It's always great to get Brian Rolfe aboard. Does amazing work over at Heat Check CBB. He's one of their main writers, doing an amazing job taking a look at the landscape of college basketball, just getting us all set for what is going to be a tremendous NCAA tournament. And those guys over there at Heat Check CBB, they don't stop at the NCAA tournament. They're going into the NIT, they're going into all these smaller tournaments, they're doing an amazing job 12 months out of the year to get prepared for the best time of year. So a big thanks to Brian for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. They give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Wednesday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at GNR41. Going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is going to start with the two first four games in Dayton, and then from there, we go into the NIT. The NIT is sort of herky-jerky in that it really doesn't go in time order, and you're going to notice that on some of the betting boards that the bottom team is actually the road team, so very unique situation there. I think that they just put the top-seeded team
at the bottom, and sometimes the top-seeded team actually hits the road for the NIT, so one of those strange situations there. But let's get things started with my DK Nation write-up, 671-672. Fairleigh Dickinson at Texas Southern, new battle from Dayton, Texas Southern, between a 2-2.5 point favorite with your total between 146.5 and 147.5. I did set Texas Southern as a 2.5 point favorite. I recognize that they've got the unsavory 20 losses, but at the very least, they won their conference tournament, unlike Fairleigh Dickinson. And the big thing for me with Fairleigh Dickinson, and this is part of the reason why the write-up is going to be on the over, they're just terrible on defense. 297th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Now, they do have three separate guys that give you at least 4.5 rebounds per game, as you're able to get that from Joe Munden Jr., Ansley L. Moore, along with Sean Moore, but I take a look at this bunch and they don't do a great job down low. They're in the bottom 30 nationally in opponents' 2-point and 3-point shooting percentage, but they do also do a better job on offense. They as a whole shoot about 34.5% from three. L. Moner, who I was mentioning before, along with Grant Singleton, combined for 28.2 points, about 4.8 assists. They both shoot between 37.5% and 38.5% from 3-point range. Top scorer in Dimitri Roberts has been able to give you 16.5 points, a little bit over 4 assists, mid-30s 3-point shooter as well. Fairleigh Dickinson, solid at taking care of the ball, and right around 100th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Texas Southern, a top 40 team in terms of total possessions per game. Now, they stink with their shooting. They shoot 66% of the free throw line, 28.5% from 3, but they take right around 73.5% of their shots one away from home. Inside the three-point arc, that is a top 20 percentage in the country, so they know to pound it inside. They're going to be able to win the battle on the glass with Jordan Carl Nicholas. He's been able to give you 10.5 points, 9 boards. I like his game. You've been able to have some very nice production all year long out of Davon Barnes as well, 13.5 points. Relatively solid at being able to give out multiple assists per game, and PJ Henry has been on one recently as well. This man has been able to supply at least 19 points in 4 out of the team's last 5 games, had a 41 spot against Elkhorn State to close out February in the conference tournament. He had 26 against Alabama A&M. He has been a bucket getter for this team. A bunch in Texas Southern that has really been all over the place with regards to their offense, but it is a squad that's gotten to at least 74 points in 3 out of their last 5 games and 18 out of the last 22 games. Fairleigh Dickinson has been able to get to at least 70 themselves. It is a Texas Southern team that they turn the ball over a little bit more than what you'd like, right in the neighborhood of about 14 turnovers per game, but at the same time, it's not like Fairleigh Dickinson is necessarily doing a great job of being able to generate swipes either. This is a bunch that they do get right around 8 steals per game, but a lot of that is just due to the fact that they do play at a very fast pace themselves. So I do think that for Texas Southern, them being able to round into form and them being able to have more rebounding is going to be able to win out in this spot. My DK Nation write-up is going to be on the over because I do think that this is going to be a game close enough for late game fouling. And I do think that Texas Southern rounding into form and at just the right time, getting big performances for PJ Henry, that's going to help them take it to a Fairleigh Dickinson defense that is just terrible. My DK Nation write-up, that is going to be on the over with Texas Southern, made them a 2.5 point favorite, so one to lay up to 2 with Texas Southern. My write-up, that is on the over. And then we go 7-3, 7-4 out in Dayton. Arizona State and Nevada do battle. Nevada opened up as an underdog of 1 point. They're now a 2-point underdog. And your total on this game, it is between 134 and 134.5. I did set my line at 2. Now, I personally took a very early 1-1.5 with Arizona State. I would say that if you're looking at this right now, wait upon a little bit of a line move because I did set my number at a 2. So if you took the early number with Arizona State, good on you. If not, this is going to be a number that moves somehow, some way in the AM. If you're able to get up to like 2.5, 3, I'd be taking the points with Nevada. If you get back down to that 1-1.5 range, it is going to be a buy point for me on Arizona State. Arizona State, a top 40 team in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and what they do a really good job of is being able to guard inside. Top 10 in the country in opponents' 2-point shooting percentage, and it's a Nevada team that, they shoot 34.5% from 3. It's not great, it's not terrible, but they do like to do a lot of their work on the inside. Jared Lucas has been a nice outside shooter, shooting 38% from 3, 17 points per game. You've got size with Darion Williams, along with Will Baker. Will Baker, 7-footer that is able to pop 3, 13.5 points, 5 boards, shoots 35.5% from 3. And then Williams is just a statue, suffer at 6'6", 7.5 points, 7.3 rebounds per game. Now, the Arizona State, not a team that's necessarily going to put up a bunch of points, despite the fact that they're in the top 85 terms of total possessions per game. They only shoot about 31.5% from three-point range. You've got the Cambridge brothers in Desmond and Devon Cambridge combining for 23.5 points. With Devon, he's able to give you 5.5 boards. Desmond, 1.8 steals per game. And it is a squad that is able to generate right around 7.5 steals per game. It's all about whether or not Nevada is going to be able to stay disciplined. They're a top 15 team in the country in free throw shooting percentage. They only turn the ball over 10.5 times per game. You've been able to have Keenan Blackshear do a nice job stuffing the stat sheet. Gives you right around 4.5 boards, 4.5 assists, 14.5 points per game. But it has been a Nevada team that enters into this tournament very wobbly, and it does seem like Arizona State has been able to do a nice job of being able to buckle down with their defense, as this squad, really, other than their harebrained games against Arizona, they had that one game where they won that game in the 80s, and then in the conference tournament game, they gave up 78 to Arizona. So you take out games played against Arizona, 72 points of fear surrendered in each of the last three games. Instead of had a bunch at in regulation because they have played a few games that have went to overtime themselves. So in regulation, only 66 points for fear and far their last five games. I did set my total as a result at a 134. So here at 134.5, it is my buy point on the under. I personally took an early sub 2 with Arizona State. If you get back down below 2, advise laying with Arizona State. Anything north of 2, going to be taking a look at the points with Nevada. Now it's at the NIT games. This is 7-5, 7-6, and this is a unique situation as Youngstown State is actually the home team, but they're listed on top, and they're going to be going against Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State, the road team, is between a 5.5 and a 6-point favorite. Your total is anywhere between 148.5 and 149. Got an Oklahoma State defense that did show their cracks throughout the back half of the season, but still certainly going to be the better defensive team in this spot. In terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, Oklahoma State still a top 50 team with this regard, and they've got Musa Cisse, who's going to be able to win the battle down low. He's able to give you right in the neighborhood about 8 rebounds per game going up against a Youngstown State team that has Malik Green and Adrian Nelson combining for about 16.5 rebounds per game, so they've been able to do a solid job down low. And for Youngstown State, top 15 team in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, shooting about 37% as a whole from 3-point range. Wayne Cole, he is their main guy, shooting 43% from the outside, 17.5 points per game. But it is going to be a little bit tough for them to be able to hold up against the size of Oklahoma State. But I am going to be willing to take the points in this spot, as I could only set this as a 5-point line. And the main reason why is because Oklahoma State is going to be without Avery Anderson once again. So while Youngstown State is going to be a little bit outgunned with regards to the actual low post defenses, I do think that Nelson along with Green are going to be able to do a solid job, but more or less on the offensive side of things, you do have an Oklahoma State team that they're going to be relying upon really John Michael Wright along with Bryce Thompson for the main form of their offense. These two guys will be able to give you about 21.5 points. They both shoot about 35% from three-point range combined. Cisse is able to give you 2 blocks per game, but hasn't been healthy throughout much of the year. I mean, if he misses this game, I wouldn't be overly surprised because he has not been 100% for much of the year. Caleb Asbury has been relatively solid for this Oklahoma State team as well. But I do think that for Youngstown State, they also did a better job towards back half of the season of really being able to D up a little bit more as well. It's a bunch that they gave up 70 points or fewer in regulation because in a lot of overtime games and pretty much 10 out of their last 18 games. So there was marked improvement there. The offense has been firing all cylinders all season long. And it's an Oklahoma State team that comes in with relatively bad form with their offense, 71 points or fewer in each of their last five games. So it is a total that I did set at 142. I'm going to be willing to dive under. Oklahoma State, a relatively mid-tempo team. Youngstown State really didn't push tempo. They're just really efficient. And for Oklahoma State, going to set them as a 5-point favorite. So we'll take 5.5 to 6 with Youngstown State at home. And I'm going to be taking a look at this total under 707, 708 on the betting board. It is Alcorn State, and they're going to be hitting the red face off against North Texas. North Texas is a 17-17.5 point favorite with your total between 125.5 and 126. I set my total at a 120.5. I'm going to be willing to dive under. You always question motivation when it comes to the NIT, all these ancillary tournaments, but we saw North Texas in the NIT last year, and they still played really rough and tumble defense. You may recall that game against Virginia. Had one of the lowest totals you're ever going to find, and the only reason why it went over is because you had overtime, but I do think for Alcorn State, I mean, if they're scoring what they're scoring in the SWAC, then they're going to have a really tough time here as they scored in their final five games 71 points or fewer in 4 of them. This is not a good Alcorn State shooting team as it's collective. They're shooting 29.5% from 3, 41% from the floor. They're a relatively mid-tempo team. Now, it's a little greater than the sum of its parts approach, as you've got four different guys in Jeremiah Kendall, Byron Joshua, Dominic Brunton, Keandre Montgomery. That'll give you between 10.5 and 12 points per game. Nobody gives you north of 12. Nobody gives you less than 10.5 among that bunch. And they'll give you at least 3.7 rebounds per game, with Kendall being able to give you 6.5 boards. But he's the only guy that gives you north of 4.5 rebounds per game. You just have the better top-flight talent when it comes to North Texas. North Texas is going to have Abdul Usman doing a nice job. 11 points, 6 boards. Tyler Perry, you've seen him on the silver screen. Now you see him on the hardwood. 70 points per game. Shoots 42% from 3. Overall, North Texas shooting 35% from 3. And North Texas plays at a pace that's about a possession and a half less than any other team in college basketball. And yet they still do a great job with their defense, because I always say this, just because you play slow doesn't necessarily mean that you play tremendous defense, but this is a legitimate top 50 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Meanwhile, it's an Alcorn State bunch that they're clocking in right around 165th in the country. I will say this for Alcorn State, though, they're only giving up about 2 points more per 100 possessions when they do leave home, so they've been able to do a great job on that front. They do have to go up against a North Texas team that's 11th with this regard, but I do feel like this spread just a little bit too lofty, because, well, you're not going to get a lot of possessions in this game, and Alcorn State has been better on defense on the stretch, giving up 66 points or fewer in each of their last three games. It is a North Texas team that they gave up 76 to UAB, obviously. That was a little bit of a harebrained game, and it has been a team that has been able to score a little bit more down the stretch, 67 plus points in each of their last three games, but I do think that at the identity of North Texas, playing super-duper slow, I think that that's going to be able to allow them to win this game, and win this game by double figures, but you're asking a lot of a North Texas team that's dead last in the country to cover 17 against an Alcorn State team that did win 18 games. I set my number at 16.5. I'm going to be willing to take the points with Alcorn State. Made my total 120.5. I think that's a legitimate question of whether or not Alcorn State is going to be able to get to 50 in this game. So, diving under and taking the points with Alcorn State. 709, 710 on the betting board. Santa Clara is the top team, but they're actually the home team, as they are going to be playing against Sam Houston State. Sam Houston State, the better seed on the road, is a 4.5 to a 5-point underdog. Your total in between 142.5 and 143, and I did set my total at a 141. I'm going to be willing to dive under, and Sam Houston State, I made them the 1-point favorite. I'm willing to take them out right on the money line. Sam Houston State has been able to do an amazing job all year long with their defense, and if Grand Canyon doesn't go 16 of 30 from 3-point range on them in the WAC tournament, they're probably looking at being a really pesky 13 seed in the NCAA tournament. As Sam Houston State as a collective, they're in the top 20 in terms of 3-point shooting percentage, shooting over 38% as a collective, 9th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, going up against the Santa Clara team that they're looking to run it and gun it. Santa Clara is one of the fastest team in the country in terms of total possessions per game, 175th of the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis as well. So I do find this to be a little bit of a battle of opposites, and typically it's easier to slow a team down than it is to speed one up. Sam Houston State outside the top 275 in terms of total possessions per game. Now, the one thing that Sam Houston State does not have is a dominant rebounder. That is going to be of the advantage of Santa Clara, but this team does a great job by committee of being able to reel in some boards, as you've got 8 different guys that give you at least 3 rebounds per game. Your main headliner is Qua Grant, 14 points, 4 boards, 4 assists, 1.9 steals, shoots 35.5% from 3. Sam Houston State does need to avoid turnovers as well. They do turn the ball over 13.5 times a game despite a relatively slow style. That's because they're looking to get good 3-point shots. But Santa Clara, despite being an up-tempo team, only about 6 steals per game. Braden Pozmeski, he's best overall player out there on the floor. 20 points, 8.8 boards, 3.5 assists, 1.8 steals, shoots 43.5% from 3-point range. He has been amazing. And then you got someone in Parker Brown who's able to give you 8 points, 6 boards, good versatility there with a block per contest. Pops reads if he needs to, though doesn't necessarily do it very well. Carlos Stewart shoots 40% from 3 with 15.5 points per game. But I do think that Sam Houston State is going to be up for this test. Sam Houston State already has true road wins against Oklahoma and Utah, and they've allowed north of 72 points just 3 times this year as well. The defense has been relatively battle-tested. Santa Clara, they just have not seen a lot of defense all year long playing out there in the WCC. I mean, it's a bunch that they have given up at least 74 points in 4 of their last 5 games. They've gotten to at least 80 in each of their last 5 games. So it's a battle of complete and utter opposites, as Sam Houston State has allowed fewer than 60 points in 4 out of their last 5 games. And I do think that the defense is going to win out in this spot. I set my total at 141. I'm diving under. Sam Houston State just such a well-put-together team, a team that's very efficient, a team that has so many guys just knowing their role. So it is a circumstance where I set Sam Houston State as a one-point road favorite. I'm taking them out right on the money line, and I'm going to be taking a look at this total under. 7-11, 7-12 on the betting board. Oregon is going to be playing SUC Irvine. Zot, zot for the Anteaters. We have seen a move on this game. Irvine opened up as a 9.5-point underdog. Now they're between a 7 to a 7.5-point underdog. Total is anywhere between 145.5 and 147.5, and Irvine already knocked off Oregon on the road this year. I set my line at 5. I don't think that Oregon is going to be losing outright for a second straight time, but I'm still willing to take the points with UC Irvine despite the line move. UC Irvine has been one of the best defensive teams on the road in all of college basketball this year, as overall for the season, Irvine 53rd in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but they're actually giving up fewer points when they're away from home than when they are at home. They're a top 20 team in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis when they leave home, going up against an Oregon team that's outside the top 100 with this regard. And Fally Dante has been solid down low for Oregon, 13.5 points, 8.5 boards, but you may recall he got a little bit banged up in the Pac-12 tournament game, so he might not play his full allotment of minutes in this game. Will Richardson, Jermaine Cousar, they combined for 25 points. They both shoot between 33 and 34% from three. Just honestly, it's been a sad year for Will Richardson. 3 turnovers per game. He hasn't been there, and Fally Dante is the only guy in the roster that gives you north of 5 rebounds per game. Meanwhile, for UC Irvine, we had a pair of guys in Dawson Baker along DJ Turn It Up Davis, combining for 30.5 points per game. Davis shoots 40% from three. Baker, 37.5% from the outside. For Irvine, they don't necessarily generate as many steals. They're not as dominant down low as they have been in past years, but it's because of backcourt. This year is much better than it has been in past years. It's P.R. Cockrell averages as many points as assists per game. 5 points, 5 assists, CO per game, all while only turning the ball over twice. He has been a good floor general for this UC Irvine team. And for Irvine, they really buckled down with their defense towards the back half of the season. 65 points of fear surrendered in 3 of their last 4 games. Now, Oregon has been able to do a little bit better job with their offense, getting to at least 69 points in 4 of their last 5 games. But Oregon, outside the top 200 in terms of total possessions per game, Irvine is actually playing more around 130th, 140th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. But last time these two teams met, 69-56. Irvine went on the road, got it done. They shot 12 of 28 from three in that game. Oregon shot 33% from the floor. I certainly think that Oregon is going to be a little bit more warm with regards to their shooting in this game, but I could see something similar to where Oregon turns the ball over 15 times like they did the first time around, and Irvine turns it over 10. So I do think that Irvine is a little bit more of the disciplined team. I do think that in the end, Oregon is going to be able to get a little bit of revenge, but I don't think that this is a total that warrants being in the mid-140s. I set my total at 141. I'm diving under, and for Oregon, I just have not been impressed by them all season long. Could only make them a 5-point favorite. So taking the points with Irvine and the under. 713, 714 on the betting board. Central Florida, it's a road face-off against Florida. The Gators are between a 2 to 2.5-point favorite. Total is anywhere between 142 and 143. Big-time line movement with regards to this one, as Florida opened up a 4.5-point favorite, and I wholeheartedly agree with the move. I actually made Central Florida my 1-point favorite. I'm going to be taking them outright on the money line. It's a rivalry battle between two teams that are within the state. Florida without Colin Castleton, who has been the heart and soul of this team, 16 points, 7.5 boards, 2.5 assists per game. So, I mean, he was doing it all. And ever since he has been out of the fold, this is a Florida team that just has not been themselves. The wins that they got were against LSU and Georgia, and that is it. Now, I recognize that they had a spirited effort in that game against Mississippi State, and Riley Kugel has been able to do a nice job stepping up for this team. Ever since the injury to Castleton, he has been able to give the team double figures in every one of their games, and as a matter of fact, he has put up at least 14 points in each of the team's last 6 games, so give them a little bit of credit where credit is due, but Florida really doesn't have a lot of rebounding. It's one of their top rebounders has been Marion Jones ever since the injury to Castleton. 5.5 points, 3.5 boards, comes in from Penn State. It's a Florida team that overall shot just 32% for three, a relatively mid-tempo team that was doing a good job with their defense prior to the Colin Castleton injury, but with Castleton out of the fold, that has really waned. They do come in giving up 70 points or fewer in each of the last 3 games, but that's a byproduct of playing against Georgia, LSU, and also playing against Mississippi State, who's dead last in the country in terms of 3-point shooting percentage. Meanwhile, you've got a Central Florida team that has been one of the best defensive teams away from home in all of college basketball. Central Florida overall 48th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but you take a look at them in a roadside shoot-your-court environment, that is 18th. They're giving up just 0.2 of a point more per 100 possessions when they're away from home. And Taylor Hendricks, this guy is dominant. 15.5 points, 7 boards, shoots 40% from 3. C.J. Kelly, Ithiel Horton, they've been able to combine for about 25.5 points per game. They both give you 1.4 steals per game. Kelly shoots 40% from 3, 35% from Horton. And then the numbers of Central Florida's defense are a little bit skewed by the fact that they were without for quite a while Darius Johnson, who is their leader in steals with 2.1. He is back in the fold for this one as well. So I do take a look at Central Florida. I think that they are certainly going to be up for this game. The offense has been clicking. They've been able to score north of 70 points in each of their last three games. Their defense has been on point whenever they have been on the road. And going up against a Florida team without Colin Castleton, you got to wonder how much you're going to be invested in this game. I do like Central Florida in this intrastate rivalry to be able to get it done outright. I do think that their defense on the road continues to be supreme. Semi-total 137.5 diving under. And with Central Florida, made them the 1.5-point favorite, so taking them outright on the money line. 7-15, 7-16 on the betting board. Cincinnati, and yes, Bill Belichick, we are on to Cincinnati. They are on to playing us to Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech, a 5-5.5 point underdog. Totals anywhere between 151 and 152. I did somebody total at 145. I'm going to be willing to dive under. It feels like I'm on the under in all of these NIT games, but the big reason why is that Virginia Tech, I recognize that the defense has not been great. They're outside of the top 160 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. It's still not an up-tempo team. They are well outside the top 200 in terms of total possessions per game. Cincinnati has been trending upward a little bit more with regards to their tempo, and it is a Virginia Tech team that they are allowing on a per-possession basis right around 9.5 points more per 100 possessions when they are away from home. But I'm going to be willing to take 5.5 or more with Virginia Tech just because they do have some good versatility. Grant Basile along Justin Mutz. Both of these guys stuff a stat sheet. Basile, 16.5 points, 5.5 boards, a little bit over a block, shooting 39% for 3. He's a 6'8 combo player. Justin Mutz at 6'7, 13 points, 7.5 boards, 4.5 assists, mid-30s three-point shooter for a Virginia Tech team that only turns the ball over 9.9 times per game. Interesting matchup in that it's a Landers Nolly ball, as Landers Nolly began his career at Virginia Tech, has been a well-traveled gentleman ever since then. He's the top scorer for Cincinnati. 16.5 points, 5.5 boards, shoots 42% from 3 in Cincinnati. They also do a nice job not turning it over. 10.5 turnovers per game, but what I think is going to keep Virginia Tech in it is that the rebounding of Cincinnati hasn't been great. You've got Victor Lakeen, who's been able to give you 11.5 points, 7 rebounds per game. Has been a little bit banged up towards the back half of the season. And Odia Guama has been able to step up recently. 5-plus rebounds so far in the team's last 5 games, with having Lakeen be a little bit banged up. He's been a nice cog for the team. Micah Adams-Woods is able to give you 9.5 points, 3.5 assists. Does a nice job doing a little bit of this and that along David DeJulius. 5.2 assists and 1.8 turnovers per game, but I do think that this is going to be a game in which it's going to be a little bit more about execution, and Virginia Tech down the stretch played much better defense. 64 points or fewer surrendered in 3 of their last 4 games. Got a Cincinnati team that has been a little bit all over the place in terms of their defense as well, as it's a squad that has given up at least 69 points in each of their last 5 games, but one of those games did go to overtime as well, and it was just an over conference in general in terms of the American. I do think that Cincinnati going to be able to rate it in a little bit more down low. I do think that this is going to be a bit more of a low possession game that Virginia Tech is going to be able to hold in with their versatility, along Sean Badula doing a nice job of dishing out the ball. He in the backcourt has been able to give you right around 15 points, 3.8 assists, shoots in the mid-30s from 3 point range, being able to find someone like Hunter Couture, who has been able to shoot 42.5% from 3, 2.5 assists, 11 points per game out of him. So I do think that the offense is execute. I just don't think you get enough possessions for an over. So I set my total 145, diving under with Cincinnati, made them a 5-point favorite. I think Virginia Tech holds in there on the glass. Well, and take 5.5 with Virginia Tech and the under. 7-17, 7-18 on the betting board. New Mexico is going to be playing us to Utah Valley. Utah Valley is between a 5.5 and a 6-point underdog, and your total is between 162 and 162.5. It's a situation of something's got to give. I mean, New Mexico actually began through the month of, I would say, January as a top 75 team in all of college basketball in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Since the beginning of the month of February, they have been a bottom 100 team in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Meanwhile, Utah Valley has really been getting after it on the defensive end, and I thought that if they made the NCAA tournament, they would be dangerous as well. 29th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, with Aziz Bandogo really being a big reason why. True 7-footer that comes in from Akron, 11.5 points, 10.2 rebounds, 3 blocks per contest out of him, and this Utah State defense travels. They are right around 16th of the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis away from them, and they've got a trio of guards that are able to put the biscuit in the basket. Trey Woodbury, Latre Dothard, along with Justin Harmon. These three guys have been able to combine for right around 40 points per game. You've had Woodbury be able to supply 5.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, shooting 40% from three-point range. Now, Utah Valley, they turn the ball over nearly 14 times per game. New Mexico, a top 40 team in terms of tempo. They do a better job of holding onto the ball, 11.3 turnovers per game, and they provide a good backcourt duo in Jalen Hustle and Jabal Mashburn Jr. They combine for 36.5 points. You have House giving you 4.6 assists, 2.5 steals per game, shooting 38% from three, and Mashburn shoots 38% from three as well, but with New Mexico, they are going to need to get good contributions out of some like KJ Johnson. Shoots 45% from 3.5 points per game. And Maurice Uduze, along with Josiah Alec, they've been able to combine for 16.6 rebounds per game. Uduze, 16.5 points per game. But really, outside of your big three, you don't necessarily get massive contributions. Utah Valley has Taj Small, has been able to do a nice job contributing to the cause. And for Utah Valley, they've given up fewer than 70 points so far. Their last five games, you had New Mexico team that is the exact opposite. They've given up at least 76 points in each of their last four games. As a matter of fact, they've given up at least 80 points in three of their last five games. So it is a good old situation of something's got to give. Utah Valley is built around the post being able to hold up there. New Mexico, they're looking at guard play. They're looking to run and shoot. And I do think that Utah Valley is going to be able to get points up on the board, but I do think that Utah Valley's offensive style wins out. I think that Utah Valley is a team that wants to be there a little bit more. I did set my line at 2.5. I think that New Mexico is going to be able to win the game outright. They're going to be playing in the pits, so that's a good home court environment. But I'm going to be willing to take 5.5 to 6 here with Utah Valley. When it comes to this total, did set it at 153.5. I think that Utah Valley is going to be able to throttle things down. So looking at the under and looking at Utah Valley, we'll wrap things up with 719, 720 on the betting board. Clemson is going to be playing against Morehead State. Morehead State is a 15.5 point underdog with your total 138, and I did set my line at 13.5. I'm going to be willing to take the points with Morehead State. Morehead State, a little bit outgunned in this matchup, but I do like what Mark Freeman is able to bring to the table. He's been able to supply 15 points, 3.8 assists, shoots 37.5% from three-point range for a Morehead State team that they're in the bottom runner in terms of total possessions per game. Clemson has become a little bit more of a mid-tempo team, and Clemson has been very hit or miss with regards to their defense. So they do have two guys with size and versatility that are terrific, and Hunter Tyson, coupled with PJ Hall. They've been able to combine for about 30.9 points per contest. Both of them shoot north of 40% per three, with both being at least 6'6". They've been able to do a nice job with their defense as well. Tyson gives you a steal per game. You get about a block per contest out of PJ Hall as well, with Clemson being right around 83rd in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. And at home, they've been at their best, giving up 8.1 points fewer per 100 possessions. But it is also a Clemson team that they've been a little bit shaky with their offense as well, scoring 64 points or fewer in two of their last five games, but they have also given up 64 points or fewer in three out of their last four as well. So you've got the good and the bad there. With Morehead State, they're going to have a tough time down low. Alex Gross is able to give you 12 points, 7.5 rebounds, a little bit over a block and a half per contest, and then you're going to be relying upon a lot of guys like a Jake Wolf to be able to step up in the backcourt. 9.5 points, 2.5 assists, shoots 39.5% from three. Khalid Thomas, 8 points, 5 boards, okay 3-point shooter. Morehead State as a whole has done a nice job of being able to reduce on the turnovers, 12.2 turnovers per game. And Morehead State, they really entered into that OVC tournament playing some of their best defense, as they have given up 65 points or fewer in each of their last five games. And as a matter of fact, if you take a look in regulation, the last time that Morehead State has given up north of 72 points, you have to go all the way back to January 14th. So that is a span of 13 games that Morehead State has given up 72 points or fewer. So I do think that Morehead State is going to be able to get a little bit more of their slow, grimy style. Clemson has the better athletes, but Morehead State does have a guy in Mark Freeman that does a good job of being able to dish out the ball. That should be able to keep the team lively in this game. So I did set my number at 13.5. I'm going to be willing to take the points with Morehead State. With regards to the total, set it at a 131.5. So also diving under, and that will wrap things up for the Wednesday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. A big thanks to Brian Rolfe. Does great work over at HXCBB. He joined me in the last segment. If you do like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways to be able to throw those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, at @JNN_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, naming does not matter. As per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is sign an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast. If I had that 5-star review, coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season. And that means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
It's draft season. The 2024 NFL Draft is right around the corner, and the Move the Six podcast has you covered for all your draft needs. The show's hosted by me, Daniel Jeremiah, and my partner, Bucky Brooks.
When it comes to Detroit and the draft, Move the Sticks is the podcast that will answer all of your questions. Who should you put in your mock draft? Don't worry, tune in and you'll be ready to watch the draft like a scout.
We've been studying these prospects all season, so you won't get a better opinion. Subscribe now and listen to the Move the Sticks podcast on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Lombardi may have been lifted, but that doesn't mean there's no football to talk about. It's the offseason, and there's no better way to stay up to date with the latest from our league than with the Around the NFL podcast. Join me, Dan Hensis, and my buds, Mark Sessler and Greg Rosenthal, for news and fresh content all offseason long. From the start of free agency, where we'll break down familiar faces headed to new places, to the next generation of superstars walking across that stage at the NFL draft, we have you covered. Listen to the Around the NFL podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Heed the call.